Live from the Ghost Hunter Store. Brought to you by the Shadowlands, South Jersey Ghost Research, and the Ghost Hunter Store. Here's some paranormal straight talk with your hosts, Dave Giuliano and Marty Haynes.
Hi, everybody. Tonight's guests are Eric Pencil and Edward Vargas from Dusk Till Dawn Paranormal Investigators.
That can cover a number of things. There's no one easy question to what is a ghost.
And just to add to what Eric said, it could also be something of a negative origin. It could also be demonic, or it could also be a multidimensional being. I mean, that's probably the best description I can give what a ghost is. You know, he can exist in this dimension as well as in the next plane. And, you know, that's what we're really trying to find answers.
Yeah. My answer is usually similar. It's ghost is like more like a category than actually a thing. Yeah, residual hauntings, spirits of deceased, non-human spirits, all that kind of stuff. So you guys are like on the same. The last person I asked, there was a huge gap of dead air. They weren't expecting that question, and it was like, wow, a little bit of thought had to go into it. So how did you guys get started, first of all, like in the paranormal?
Okay, well,
you guys will just do tandem.
we'll tag team. Well, most folks start in this business or get interested in research because of their own personal experiences, and yeah, I had several experiences in the past. I have to say that with my first experience, and I didn't believe what it was, and it was actually what I believe to be what's known as a succubus, and I'm sure that it was messing with me over the course of several months, and I didn't know what it was, and it was messing with me while I was asleep. I'm talking about I must have been in my mid-20s, and I just felt something holding me down, and just a chill, but I wasn't aware because I wasn't awake. Mm-hmm. And my sister, I thought she was insane because she said that something similar was happening to her for quite a long time. I just blew it off. I mean, I was in my mid-20s, and I didn't care. Until one night that I kind of thought, well, tonight I'm going to wake up. And I did wake up. And when I did wake up, I felt that, you know, like that pressure that you feel when something's being pushing you down. And I woke up and my eyes opened up and I saw something over me that was milky white. My first reaction was to try to punch it. Mm-hmm. And then I called out for my mommy. I don't know why I did that. And then it just sort of like disappeared. It never bothered me again. And I didn't think about it much till years later when I discussed it with my sister, and then I had another experience. But
did she have the same vision?
Oh, she had, it would actually follow her around whenever she stayed over a friend's house, and it was touching her in spots that, you know, I'm sure we all know if we haven't, you know, we use our imaginations, where she was actually being abused, actually.
Okay.
And It was an experience that to this day I had difficulty believing, you know, wrapping my head around it. But believe me, it happened, and that's, I think, the first thing that most people think is that when something happens to them, they don't believe it until they have hard, tangible evidence to back it up.
Yeah, and that evidence is hard to come by. So
yeah,
but it's I think all of us. I think back to things that happened to me growing up, and every now and then I'll just go like, yeah, not really. That's just a little too crazy to have happened. But it did, you know. So
what was your like first experience that
when I grew up, there was my house was just crazy. I had stuff moving all around. There were apparitions, all different kinds of things. But my first experience was an apparition laying in bed next to me when I was 3 years old.
Wow.
So that was, you know, a little shocked.
At 3 years.
My parents weren't, so yeah, they didn't understand, so they thought that was imagination. So I kind of dealt with it at an early age on. I think, I don't know which would be worse, dealing with it in your 20s for the first time or dealing with it early and continuing, right. You know. Now, how'd you get into it?
My experience started when I was 8 years old. We moved into a house that was built in the early 1800s, and I experienced everything from what I understand now was residual, intelligent, and demonic. And the demonic part, unfortunately, that had to do with my mother, the things that she was into at the time. And when you're that young, it just, you have no idea what's going on. So as I got older, I started looking into it, studying things, finding out as much as I could, because I wanted to know why they were there, why they were doing these things to us. What did we do for them to want to do this, to harm us like that? So that's when I just started sneaking into old abandoned homes when I was probably 12, 13, taking photos, taking a reel-to-reel recorder with me, same with the cemeteries, trying to find these things, trying to get photos and, try to match them up and try to explain to myself what was happening. And then when I got old enough to join a group legally, I guess was back then you had to be like 20 years old, I joined a few different groups. And I found out a few things, but I really didn't learn a whole lot. They were more into trying to make money off a few different things. So after a few years, I, decided to go out on my own and eventually started Dusk Till Dawn in 2009. But I've been in this with other teams since 1990.
Interesting.
And that's basically that. I met Eric at your Ghost Hunting 101.
Oh, is that how you guys hooked up?
That's how, yeah. That's so, the first time, of course.
Good. I only had about 3 questions for you. Oh.
So. That's where 4 of us hooked up.
Yes, yes. And of course, what better place to learn how to hunt than properly through you? So I don't want to ask kids too much.
We all went to the GAR Civil War Museum, right?
Yes.
I wasn't there.
Yeah. It was myself and Karen, which is right. Part of the team, and someone else as well.
Yeah, because I remember that you guys were using the EM pump.
Yes,
that was the first time I saw someone using an EM pump, so that was pretty interesting.
Oh, we almost got kicked out.
I'm getting ready to go to the GAR tonight. We're having an event there.
Oh, that's awesome.
So
I recommend that to everyone out there.
Another group of people will get to experience that.
Yeah.
That's a lot of fun, and I mean I remember we almost got kicked out because Karen decided to start crossing over spirits, and that's not a thing that the spirits there or the entities there actually want. They like it there.
Yeah, there's quite a few. The place we're talking about is it's called the GAR, the Grand Army of the Republic Civil War Museum in Philadelphia, and it's got a lot of artifacts. It's probably I've been to Gettysburg. I've only been there once, but I've actually in this one building. Actually, it's two mansions side by side. But there seems to be more artifacts in the concentration than I saw all throughout Gettysburg, bullet wise, and different fragments and all different kinds of stuff like that. Not large stuff, but small on the smaller scale, uniforms, things like that. So I expected that activity. But there are former members that used to be there that have had various, one was a suicide, one was a couple just old age, but they were like lifetime members of this. They are seen and felt, constantly. And they're the ones that I think, especially the people like Kathy, who was like the caretaker there when we were there that night, very overprotective of, spirit rescues for certain things. There's certain times and place. Those guys are there because they want to be there. So to kind of, not that it would have had any effect, but it was just the thought, behind it that, if you don't really cross somebody if they're happy where they are, they'll make up their mind when they're ready to go. And those guys are kind of like they seem to be working on some unfinished business.
Right, you couldn't cross them anyway. All you do is just rile them up.
Right,
and that's what we managed to do that night. Not entirely by my fault, but our member Karen was trying to cross them over.
And the guy in the basement's a completely different deal. I'm about the only person that I'm aware of, like in my group, over a course of 9 years that we've been investigating, that hasn't seen this guy or even felt him. So I don't know. He just doesn't want to.
Wow.
Wants no part of me, or doesn't like me, or just totally puts a shield up and blocks me.
I'm surprised that you haven't seen him.
But I just see, I can see everyone else's reaction, even in large groups down there, how they're reacting to this guy. And I've seen him manipulate objects and equipment. Mm-hmm. So I don't doubt there's someone down there, but it's very interesting. We used to use it as a training ground. And we would watch, we put the, you know, the static cams up and watch the different the groups. And we used to have a fun time all gathering around the monitor watching the trainees in the basement. Because slowly they all group together and be like standing in a little huddle. Right. Because the energies just are overwhelming from this guy. Right. So
yeah, he starts to corral them and stuff.
Yeah.
I wonder why he's shielding himself from you.
I don't know, but I'd like to meet someone else that he does it to. That's one of the questions I'll ask tonight after we're done. Did anyone not pick up on him? Because I want to find the similarity. There's got to be some reason why. I'm just going to find the common thing that I share with someone else that, you know, to figure out why he's shielding. Because, I mean, as far as everyone tells, it seems he's like a more of an angry, you know, bitter guy, but he's a human spirit.
Right.
So, but he just, for whatever reason, do not pick up on him.
Wow.
Now, you guys handle both types of cases, right? You do private homes. You do some historical locations too. And
yeah, let's say 98-99% of what we do is private. We're out there to help people, but you know, tell them what's going on in their house. A lot of people are confused. They're uncomfortable. And the worst thing you can be is, after a hard day's work, be afraid to come home to your house, which is supposed to be your place of rest where you can relax and forget about the world.
Right.
And, you know, when you come home and you're afraid to go in your house because you don't know what's going on, you're afraid something's going to happen to your kid or to your wife or to yourself, that's a terrible thing. And we go out there, we never charge a fee, and we try to find out the answers and let them know what could be going on, different steps that could be taken so they get their peace of mind back and feel comfortable again in their home.
Here's a very important question, one that I did have on my list to ask. When you guys go out to private homes or even just like a, you know, historical location, does Ed bring like 8x10 black and white glossies of himself to sign?
Constantly. Yes, constantly.
Is that like gifts that you give like your clients?
I think it's more of an ego thing. I'm not really sure.
Does it say Dusk Till Dawn and, you know,
ECF?
Yeah.
No, it just says Ed and ECF is what it says. Yes.
No, it just says Ed, you know. I just like hearing myself talk and seeing myself in the mirror a lot, so.
That's what it says.
You have the voice, the radio voice.
Yes, he does.
You certainly have the radio voice and the presence. So really? Television as well. Yeah, of course.
You're just saying that.
No.
You're saying that because you're sitting next to me.
Somebody's nose is getting brown when you're in there.
Yeah, I know.
By the way, Ed is having this filmed. He has his son here filming this whole thing, too.
Oh, yeah, he's helping me out. Just taking some pictures, that's all.
Actually, I've been recording this whole entire thing.
Oh, okay. Yes, he's recording.
We just wanted to point out that we did have to open up the back doors to let Ed's ego in.
Yes, we had a hard time getting it.
I know. It almost didn't fit in Mount Holly.
Well, you might as well mention what you're doing for...
Okay.
For those of you who don't know, or I mean, I guess many of us, through cable, as you're flipping through, we skip over a lot of channels that are, you know, languages we don't understand or we took in high school because we're not going to really get much out of them. But there was never, to my knowledge, and I'm probably wrong, but you guys were the first group that specifically targeted, you know, Spanish speakers, you know, and yes. I know we've dealt with that a lot in Philadelphia, that we've always had someone that could at least communicate,
right, yeah.
You know, enough that when we had someone, you know, call us for help, we were able to deal with it. But you guys have like embraced that.
Yes, yeah, absolutely. Well, you know, there's a large Latin community out there in the United States, and all Latin Americans or Hispanics, they believe very much in ghosts. They do. They all have a ghost story. I mean, I grew up when I was a kid hearing these ghost stories, and I got a chill at night. And you ask anyone that's of the community, and they all have a ghost story to tell. They talk about the entaconada, which is basically the high-heeled woman, and they hear footsteps of her high heels and La Llorona, which is basically a woman, the crybaby. She cries, and you hear her out her window. I mean, and of course, everyone's heard the classic, the urban classic of the woman waiting outside the cemetery and gets picked up by a taxi driver, or she acts like a hitchhiker. You know, that's universal. Mm-hmm. But they all have ghost stories, and they all believe, you know, and all of them are religious. And we just saw that in the Latin community, that there was no services in the community to help out these Hispanic or Latin American families determine where they're in their home. It's haunted. And if it is haunted, is it residual? Is it intelligent? Could we live with them? You know, there just wasn't anyone on the ground as far as I know. Same thing goes for the Spanish market, but I'll talk about that later. And I just thought, hey, you know, why not help them out? And ever since we started, you know, we've had quite a few people that have asked us to come out and investigate. And one of the best investigations is not too far from here. It's a family in Hamilton. And we had them actually, we featured them in a report that we were part of, a special news report where Telemundo, which is, you know, one of the network channels, came out actually over here to Burlington County Prison. And they followed us around with their cameras, and they, you know, tried to contact this entities and spirits. And by the way, Burlington County Prison is very haunted. And we had the folks come out as well, the family. And mm-hmm. I had done a short, brief investigation, and it's a really sad story. What happened was with this family, and they've also, by the way, for everyone that's worried about whether we can talk about this, they've actually given us permission to talk about it, because they were actually on TV as well. Last year in July, they had the grandfather or the father of the mother or the wife pass away. And what happened was, is the gentleman didn't have the keys to the house. The family wasn't there. And the guy went around, grabbed a short ladder, went around the back, pushed up the window because it was open. And this gentleman, you know, he's old, he was heavy, and he got stuck in the window and literally suffocated to death right there and then. The ladder fell out from underneath his feet while he was climbing up. It wasn't a really, you know, it was literally the first floor, but he was trying to get in. He tried climbing up, the ladder fell off, you know, or fell under his feet, and he just got stuck between the halfway through the window inside and the other half out, and he suffocated under his own weight, and he died right there. The family found him dead. And then the family, you know, asked us to come out to investigate to see whether it was him, because a few of the kids, I think they probably have some talents, noticed that there was a black figure, and they felt his presence, and they've actually heard the guy speak. And we conducted a really good EVP session right next to the window, and this is what we also used on Telemundo as one of the EVPs. And the guy didn't want to talk to me, but he loved his beer, he loved his salsa or his mambo, and he loved gardening. And so the guy, the son-in-law, asks while we're, you know, conducting an EVP session, big guy, you know, really hulking, and he says, Antonio was his name, Antonio for short for Antonio. He says, quiero una fría, and that means, do you want a cold one, a cold brew? And lo and behold, a voice comes over, and it says, fría, or yes, like, you know, I want a cold one.
See, now that's a question that a lot of people ask, because you don't really see it. And again, unless you're watching Telemundo, you wouldn't really know that either. Mm-hmm. People always ask us at lectures, why are EVPs only in English? It's like, because most of the groups that you're going to, you know, are recording, or the most locations we go to are primarily going to be, you know, English speaking. I imagine in Europe, you know, they're going to have foreign languages. I know Ghost Hunters International has picked up German, and I believe another language too. I'm trying to think.
I know they've done Spanish, but I got to tell you in a minute. Yes, he did. He said it in Spanish, which was phenomenal. Literally, I was in France and I spoke to Marty about this in Paris in January, and we went to the Conciergerie, and that's where they held everyone from the Revolution, including Marie Antoinette and Louis before they got the chop or went in front of the Place de la Concorde, where they, you know, executed everyone, but with the guillotine. And I, you know, this place is like a huge vault. It's huge, thick walls.
Right.
And so I go up to the one of the tour guides or one of the representatives, you know, museum people, and I'm like, the guy spoke English, fortunately, and I'm like, hey, did you have any experiences here? And he's like, no. And like, you know anyone who? Yeah. I'm like, okay. Oh, coworker. Oh, really? Coworker. Where? And he says, in the chapel. And I'm like, really? Where's the chapel? And he's like, downstairs. I said, do we have access to it? And he says, yes, you do. And I'm like, okay. And how long has your, you know, coworker been working? He's like 20 years. And he says it's very haunted. So I go down there. And of course, you know, there's a lot of echoes because everything's just like, you know, marble and stuff. And I start to ask in my, I don't speak French, by the way. And I, you know, take my tour book, and of course, there's nothing that says, you know, are you dead or whatever. And so I just figured out that mort is mort. Mort is means, you know, dead or deceased. And then I looked in my little, you know, translating book or whatever, my French dictionary, and it just says, you know, like asking for stuff, you know, like, can I have an orange juice or whatever, you know, whatever. Okay, where's the bus at? And so I go, je suis, or who is? Who is, or I said, who dead? And clearly, lo and behold, I didn't hear anything at that moment. We got back from, you know, doing the touristy thing and checking out all these museums, and Paris is really nice. And then we got back to the room. And I didn't bring a recorder because it wasn't my intention to bring a recorder. But in my iPhone, all iPhones have, you know, those little recorders. And lo and behold, there's a voice on there. And I'll let you hear it right after this. And it says, exactly, in a voice, male voice, in French, says, I'm dead. In French. I say, je suis la mort. And he says, qui la mort. Just like that.
Pretty cool.
Yeah, yeah. I came back. I think I texted you, Eric, or whatever. Yeah, I was jumping. I was like, oh, I gotta go back immediately. Of course, my wife gets scared of, you know, about what I do, and she doesn't want to have any part of it because she really gets scared, and she started crying. She just said, look, what you do scares me, and we didn't come here for that. And so I immediately knew to cut my losses and just say, okay, yes, dear, whatever you want. That's it. That's right.
Hey, if you want to crank that up, we might be able to pick it up on the mic.
Okay, can I have
give
that?
Give it a shot.
Yeah. Absolutely. You can hear it. It's clear enough, and I did play it for Marty. Yeah, just yeah. Let me have it. Thank you.
Hey, because I know we had out at Fort Ticonderoga, we did get something that was it was more of a Scottish. Or like Welsh accent.
Oh, that's awesome.
That's about the closest we've ever gotten to like another language. And that was, you know, we had the possibility with French, held the fort at one time, the British, the Scots, the Indians. I mean, everybody held that fort at one
time. I'm sure you've probably gotten all those, you know, EVPs, except, you know, who knows, like Indian and
exactly,
stuff.
That's true too, you know. How many times have we written it off as like a class, you know, 3 EVP, because it sounds like this garbled mess, and it's probably some guy giving you like his date of birth, his the day he died,
right, yeah,
in
no
a language we don't understand.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. If you just give me a moment, and I just need to.
Yeah, go ahead.
Well, that's interesting, because we did a private case about a month ago, and it was a restaurant. And the reports were, you know, the owner was seeing things, and things were moving, things were, you know, out of place, voices, footsteps, of course, you know. So we were down in the basement, and I just had an overwhelming feeling. I just started saying a few words in Russian that I know, duh, and stuff like that.
Right.
And we got 3 EVPs that were in Russian.
Are you Russian?
No, I'm not Russian.
I
just picked up on
Dutch.
It. It just popped in my head, Russian. And now we're doing investigations behind the scenes to try to find out. Maybe it was a Russian workman who might have built the place. It was a place over 100 years old. But it was very interesting. One of the words that we got said, I'm here, and the other one, with you. But it was just weird because, you know, we're playing it back, and it's, you know, when you're reviewing evidence, it's like, what is this? And then Karen, who knows a little bit of that, she's the one who said, that's Russian. So she had a friend of hers who listened to it, and she said, yeah, that's Russian.
That's really deep to really think about, that how many people have blown away or just blown off EVPs
right.
that were legitimate, really A-class.
Oh, yeah.
Just because they didn't recognize the language it was. That's yeah. pretty wild. You know?
That already takes a little bit of time to do a little homework and find out, you know, what language this is.
Right.
Yeah, and I think that's why we were able to capture, you know, that voice of that. He was actually Puerto Rican, the gentleman, already in his late 70s, is because that's what we were looking for. You know, they felt his presence in Hamilton, in this household. And the family, of course, was Puerto Rican, and they all spoke Spanish, and so that's what we were looking for. Although they said that there was the black masses running around the house, but they felt as if he was there, and that's what we were looking for, and that's why we were able to. But, yeah, of course, like you said, it's always... Most, like, probably 90-some% of the time, it's in English. But I think I got it here.
Let's see if we can hear this.
Okay. So, you're going to hear me speaking a little French, and believe me, I don't speak French. I was just using the dictionary here. Okay. Did you hear that? Now you're gonna hear, because remember there's a lot of echo, but you hear the key that more.
You gotta play it back.
Yeah, I'll play it back again. And here we go again.
Yeah, hold up to the front of the mic there.
Oh, for the front of the mic. Guillemot. And I'll cue you when I can't put it any higher than what it is.
It's a deeper man.
Guillemot. Right.
Yeah, you can hear it. It sounds like there's. There's echoes, like female echoes in the background, people talking.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, people are walking through, you know, this is a museum, but you can hear and clear it. Qui est mort, meaning, you know, who's dead. You hear that?
Yeah, it's definitely a different voice.
And certainly, you know, in French, I believe he's saying, I'm dead.
Qui est mort. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, that's my only investigation overseas.
I don't know if that's sad that you went to Paris and you were still thinking about ghost hunting. Or...
That was sad. It was... well, the missus didn't like the idea.
To be honest with you, when I went to Gettysburg, I did go on a ghost tour. It was one, you know, if you've been there before, when you're walking down the main strip at night, you're bombarded by the people doing the pitches to do the tours. We had no intention of it, but this one lady talked us into it. Other than that, did nothing ghost-related. Now, my wife did, she recorded a little bit. I didn't know that she had done it. She recorded a little bit in Devil's Den that when she was feeling stuff. We were walking through there, and we got a couple voices in there. But, you know, I just went to relax more than anything and to see the history of it. I try to separate as much as possible, but... I know it's probably been, right, if I went to Europe too, it'd probably be hard to resist.
I'm sure everyone would, every ghost on the planet would be chasing you. Absolutely, you're a magnet for that. So
we had a couple of people that I know that go, you know, that go European vacations, and they'll go to a different country every year, and it's like no matter what, they swear they're not going to do anything like ghost related, but somehow they wind up someplace that's haunted, you know, and they just happen to have a camera and recorder with them, you know. Wow. It's like,
can't resist.
How could you when you see these huge old structures that are older than America, and you have these magnificent castles? I mean, you know, the temptation's too great.
So, but out of the places you've done, like around here, any of them jump out? Like this,
Collins Lane Farmhouse, built in 1732.
Yeah, that's a buzzword, Collins Lane, for us.
We were called in by the Maple Shade Historic Society because they were doing work in a house, trying to refurbish, because they want to turn it into a museum and a park for children and stuff. And the workmen, they were hearing people walking up and down the steps, second floor, things in the basement. They'd put their tools down, take their lunch break, come back. Of course, the tools would be two or three rooms away or down in the basement or up in the attic. And that went on for about a year. So they just happened to read an article in a paper about Dusk Till Dawn. People who wanted Historic Society, so that's when they contacted us, and it went from there. And it, you know, at first it looked like maybe just like a Casper type case, but it turned out to something a lot more than what we expected it to be.
Yeah, absolutely. We were, I think, perhaps in over our heads because there was a silo in the back that had a pentagram, and yes, there had been, or there is, worship in there, and we had some wicked experiences, I have to say, and Eric even more so than probably I.
That was a separate building other than...
Yeah, that was the I guess, where they kept the corn or whatever, you know, just an old-fashioned silo. For the cattle. And
there's only two like that in the on the Eastern Seaboard, as a matter of fact. So it's a... That's historic right there, and you know they want to save that and preserve that as much as they can.
Are you doing anything else for them? Any kind of fundraisers or something?
Yeah,
like
once
that?
They get the place open, we're going to be doing fundraisers for them to help them bring people in and keep the upkeep of the place because it's a neat old home. It's loaded with history.
That's one thing I recommend to all the groups that they always ask, like, how do you guys fund yourselves? And one of the easiest things to do is do a fundraiser for our historical society, help save some of these obscure to the general public locations, right, that need that extra little, the government isn't pitching into every place anymore. Even Valley Forge is falling apart. They're not getting the funding. So, so imagine some of the small places that people really know about unless you're local. They're missing out on that funding. Paranormal stuff is popular. We're able to we trade investigations for doing some lectures there, and then fundraisers. You ask for a donation after what they bring in, whatever. We do that every October, and normally it's we give the majority to the historical society, and they just give us enough to cover expenses and to help cover. You guys know now that running a ghost group does actually cost money.
Oh, of
yes,
course.
Yeah. You said it, and I have understood that. Eastern State Penitentiary has a lot to owe to you because, you kind of gave them the idea that they could, start charging it. I mean, you were there before anyone else
People
was.
People are going to stone me now when I walk around. Yeah, when we first went out there, we were the first group to ever go out there. And they had there was no paranormal tour. There was no ghost tour. There was nothing. There was just the legends and lore of the place being haunted. And we just approached them and said, hey, can we go out? And it was basically, if you can cover the overtime of the employee, you could do it. So we paid, we went out about four times that way before they started realizing, well, if we're willing to pay.
Right.
Untapped other people market. Willing to pay.
Right.
So in an unfortunate way, we were responsible for that. But then once they get on TV, they became... like a lot of the places, they see it as it's even a huge, bigger moneymaker. They also have the haunted house there, which brings in a lot of the terror behind the walls. So, it winds up being a significant portion of their income for the year.
Yeah, they should have a plaque to you, right at the entrance, because honestly, the reason why they're so popular is really, you boil it down, it's to you. You gave them that idea. You set everything in motion, and now they're a successful museum because of your efforts.
So. I think it had a lot to do with the internet in the beginning, because back then there wasn't a lot of, like now, there's groups all over the place. There's internet ghost pages everywhere. Back then, when we did it and we put up our investigation, if you put in a search, I don't even think Google was around yet. It was still Yahoo. It was the only search engine. You put Eastern State Penn in, there were so few pages that the only thing that would come up would be Eastern State Penn and our investigation page.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So it was like that, that's how inadvertently, we got popular. And when people started doing research for the shows that got popular, they would find some of those haunted locations through our website. And that's because it's been, we have time on our side. But then we've been posting, there's 13 years of cases on there right now. I don't even know how much bandwidth and space we're taking up. I'm afraid to look.
That's you're the resource where I said, I really want to get serious into this. I want to learn how to do this better. I really, there was no one else except for you, and I thank God that I was living in Jersey and the Ghost Hunter Store is here, and this is a wealth of resource for the entire community to come to. And there aren't too many in the States that you can, that's like a one-stop shop where you can really learn the ins and outs of ghost hunting and you know, go from beginner to intermediate to advanced. And also, you have proving grounds here where folks can really train, which is, that's fantastic. I was just so happy to find your website when I was looking for answers and a resource. And Shadowlands, that's awesome. Oh, an awesome site.
Basically, just I tried to make it everything that, you know, how'd this turn into like an interview with me?
Well, that's the reason why Dusk to Dawn is here. Like, we, Dusk to Dawn is modeled after SJGR.
Right.
I've been a member of several different teams. I've heard you guys are legends, and I've heard about you. I met you, and I've seen how you guys investigate, and I said, this is how my team's going to be. I want it to be like, because you guys are the best. You guys are honest. You don't rip people off. You help people, and that's why we do it. And you go around, you do all these fundraisers to help all the historic places. A lot of teams won't do that. You guys take the time and effort to do that, and that's what sets you guys apart.
See, now Eric's brown nosing.
Yeah, he is.
100%, 100%.
That was a clear-cut case.
Yeah, yeah, that just went over from me to him.
Yeah, you were much better at it. You were smoother at it.
Oh, thank you, thank you.
That was blatant.
Thank you.
I just come right out and tell it how it is. You know?
Right, right, right.
Yeah, well, I appreciate that. I mean, everything that I've developed like here through the store and even through the Shadowlands was what I was looking for when I was looking for answers, because there was nothing. There was no books. There was really, I mean, even the books, the closest to getting any kind of information that was helpful was Hans Holzer, his books. But a lot of them were more story-oriented and didn't go into a lot of the details. And even then, the technology wasn't there. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't something I could learn and understand more about spirits, but I couldn't learn more about how to go about doing it. That came like separately down the road, more from people that worked with Ed and Lorraine Warren down the road, you know, that I wound up hooking up with.
Right.
I learned more from them because they were actual investigators. So, but this is like the what I would have wished that existed, you know,
right, yeah.
30 years ago or
yeah,
so.
Yeah, you were starting out, right.
Because that would, so, and we kind of gear it that way, and that's how I always want to keep it, that when it's a place to go that it, you know, even if you have, you know, just a question on how to use something or a question about what's going on, there's some place to go or some place to call.
Right. Yeah, it makes it a lot easier for everybody, you know, this store being here and you guys providing the services that you provide.
Hey, we've had people come down from Canada. We've had people come from all over, even other countries. While they're here, they've made special trips over here. And, you know, at first it kind of boggled the mind and it makes you like going, wow. But, you know, with some of the stuff, you have to really see it to understand that some of the equipment, especially, I mean, some of the stuff that's a little pricey, you
right.
know. If there's a place you can go, I mean, no one buys like, well, now they do, but, you know, 10, 12 years ago, you didn't buy a car online.
No, you went to
the car dealer, you test drove it, right. You know, and stuff.
Kick the tires.
Yeah, stuff like that. That, you know, now there's places you can go to try that, you know, and do that. So, yeah, that's basically, so somehow, again, it just turned into me again.
Yeah,
I'm not doing this on purpose, everybody. Just so you know, this is they're turning this around.
It kind of just, you know, because our origins are actually from here when we met and we had that investigation upstairs in the attic and with you, we were lucky enough that day you were teaching. I mean, no offense to Mari, she's awesome as well, and we've learned a lot from her too. But it was just, I think that the fact that this place exists, the Ghost Hunter Store, and you have courses, and that we can come here, and that we came together, that really, you know, just spun us and then sent us in the course that
we're at. Well, that's what I noticed. That's the other bonus of all this, too, is the sense of community.
Absolutely.
Because that was seriously lacking in the paranormal world for a long time.
Right.
At least in this area, the tri-state area, or including probably New York in that, too.
Absolutely.
Four states, you know, there seems to be more of a unified, because they meet each other through here or through events out of here. And I've seen a lot of people spin off into groups or just at least into having someone else to go out places with, except, you know, instead of going by themselves.
Absolutely. So, this is
that's
hub.
It's nice to see that happening, because that was severely lacking for...
Yeah, it was. A lot of people were territorial and stuff like that when it came to investigation.
You have no idea.
Right. oh, we're not going to tell them. We don't want nobody else to go there.
It was like top secret.
Yeah, I mean, it was.
Equipment was top secret. Now you have people sharing.
Yeah.
You have equipment, techniques, all different kinds of stuff.
And that's the right way to further this and find out, to really get the answers that everybody's looking for. That's the right way to go about it.
That was the intent, really, with even selling the very first piece of equipment we sold was the cell sensor. Because at the time, that was like the state-of-the-art, you know, meter. But I thought, like, hey, if everyone's using the same meter, we could actually compare notes and see what we get the same. Not that everyone was willing to do that, you know, and right. say, well, you know, we're not going to tell them we found anything in this cell block or right. this building. Because, you know, like, I don't know how the mentality was or why it was that way. Because it was like a competition. Now it's more of a, it's what it should have been all along, more of a sharing of knowledge. Because you see the conferences more and more.
Oh, yeah.
More groups doing joint things. I mean, you guys are basically like two groups joined together,
yeah.
you know. You're two sides of, you know, the same mm-hmm. coin, basically. Right. And that's something that 10 years ago you would,
right.
If someone asked me, you know, would that ever happen, I wouldn't even have to hesitate. I'd say no, never.
Right.
Wow.
It's neat that we get to fill a void there was a void in the Spanish community when it came to paranormal teams and, you know, the people in the Spanish community getting help. The thing mm-hmm. about, you know, a Spanish people is that they're very, very, very religious.
Absolutely.
And they're the hardest to come to terms and actually approach somebody and ask for help. Because they're afraid, you know, what kind of response they're going to get.
Well,
so,
well, I think it's especially outside the community.
Right.
Because that's one thing I do like the demographics of the areas that we cover. And since I live in Philadelphia, and we probably do 40% of our cases in Pennsylvania and the suburbs of Philadelphia, I've always looked, and I know the neighborhoods and where the breakdowns are, and probably one of the biggest gaps, really, was the Hispanic neighborhoods.
Right.
And that, I think it was because we were seeing, and basically it was a language barrier more than anything.
No, you
didn't. I mean, we had Hispanic members, but they didn't speak Spanish. So, I mean, right. I think that was a barrier in itself that prevented them from reaching out, because they need that comfort level. You guys being able to speak, you know, directly to them in the way they're most comfortable. You do exactly, like, you know, what I kind of teach everybody. You break down that barrier. You make them feel as comfortable as possible. Then they're going to willing to open up and trust you and allow right. you to help.
Yes, and that's another thing.
If they're not going to, if they don't trust you, you're never going to be able to get any further and help them. So.
Yeah, true. And even when we get folks filling out the long application that we have.
Well, it's a questionnaire.
It's really a questionnaire, right, to weed out the folks that are serious and aren't. Out of, like, let's say half those questionnaires that are sent, only half probably make it back to us. And then even half of that, enough to go and do an investigation because, you know, they're not very trusting, and a lot of them, of course, you know, are undocumented, but yet they're experiencing this stuff, and there's just no one there, and that's what I thought, you know, might help the community.
Yeah.
You know, to fill that void, like you said.
That's why, and that's the point. That, like, I'm sure there's other groups out there that, you know, maybe, you know, Spanish-speaking.
Yeah, of course.
Know, but I think the way you're going about it, and with the intent and everything, and using the Telemundo to kind of get the word out there too to everybody in the community that, hey, you know, we're here, you know, that's really a good thing. And there's such a large community in New Jersey and
New York
and New York too.
Yeah, absolutely. Only thing is, we get a lot of requests for investigations, you know, since it's in Spanish and it's a Spanish website. We get stuff far as Puerto Rico, Mexico, Chile, Argentina, Spain, folks asking us, hey, why don't you come down and do an investigation? I'm like, well, we'll get to you sometime around. Thank you for asking us, but of course we don't have the budget.
You do take trips to Paris for vacation, so...
Yeah.
You know,
well, that's with the missus.
Other places really shouldn't be that big of a deal, then. Isn't that like you're just your normal get away for the summer? Which country you throw a dart at the world map and whatever comes up? Is that where you go?
The missus, she likes traveling. I mean, I'd love to. We've gotten so many requests, like from folks the majority, I have to say, Argentina, Mexico, and Spain. I'd love to go to the pyramids in Mexico. like Chichen Itza and investigate, because it has such a long history of the Maya there, yeah, and Montezuma and all that, and or the castles in Spain. You know, it's just really haunted, and I'm sure a lot of it is residual, but a lot of it, I'm sure, is intelligence.
Now that you mention that, thinking of the countries that we ship to, because we ship worldwide, when I'm the every country you're naming are ones that we really don't ship much to. I mean, we ship all over.
Okay.
You know, and there's some that really, really jump out. And Europe, I mean, some places that you can think of, like Italy's like a big one, oh, you know. Belgium is another, is huge. But like Argentina, like South America, really nothing. Central right. America, really nothing. Mexico, a little bit.
Okay.
But I think more it's transplanted, you know, people from, you know, America that are down there, not necessarily, you know, native Mexicans that are doing that. So
right.
Again, maybe it might be a cultural thing too, that because of the belief system, they're afraid if they're going to be ordering ghost hunting equipment. Obviously, they're the cat's out of the bag for somebody right. that yeah. they're into this stuff, or you know,
there are I guess you could say ghost groups and shows in Mexico and even in Spain, but there are none like in the American market, mm-hmm. there's, you know, a show every other channel.
Yeah.
And at least in the Latin American channels in the U.S., there are no shows or no documentaries regarding that. And that's what we worked on in ECF and Eastern State, you know, following your lead from having you started the investigations. Fortunately, we were able to get in there as well. And we did shoot a documentary there, and we're putting it together, and we're just about finished with it, and we're hoping that perhaps this will help get the word out in, you know, the community regarding the research and moving it forward and making it more of a science than anything else.
It's just like, I know people knock, you know, some of the shows even from the very beginning when it was just Ghost Hunters on, you know, a lot of it was, you know, maybe jealousy because they didn't have a TV show at the time. You know, that Ghost Hunters and Taps, that was it. That was the one show. But it really did let people know that these guys are, here's two plumbers that in their off time go in and help people with the hauntings.
Right.
People didn't realize that there was, you know, thousands of people like that out there. It opened, you know, everyone's eyes up to it, and you're doing the same thing for a whole other community.
Yeah, we're trying.
So that's pretty cool.
We're trying. Well, thank you, sir.
And then you just bring Eric along for the ride.
Yeah, well, Eric's. You know, we work closely together. We not too close. We, you know, we understand what people's needs, and we try to anticipate and help them out, and that's the mentality we have. You know, to try to give back to the community, since, you know, we ourselves are fortunate enough in many ways, in many aspects, you know, and that's my community service, aside from, you know, and that in the same spirit that, you know, you said that it's important to give back.
Right.
That's the message I've gotten from you, and you've helped a lot of folks, and you've bought together a lot of folks, and we definitely appreciate it. And hey, we ourselves are like that too.
Yeah. You guys are on our short list of groups that we refer cases out to, you know, because there's not a lot. I mean, there are more and more. I don't want to knock too many, but there's because there's hundreds of groups now.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
But I mean, not all share the same, you know, like philosophy of
right.
like, you know, wanting to help the people, and that being the primary goal.
Well, yeah, 100%.
And
absolutely.
You know, that when we're bombarded with cases and overflowing, we need to hand stuff off. But we have like a short list out of the hundreds of groups that, you know, are in this area, of ones that we know we can trust to hand stuff off. And you guys are, you know, on that short list. So.
Yeah, we appreciate that trust that you, you know, put in us.
You rock.
And I gave him keys and an alarm code.
Yeah, you really got to trust this guy. If you
well, got that's a lot too. Yeah.
I come in at night and I play with all the different toys. And
he is promising to take me fishing now, because that's all I need to.
You haven't gone fishing yet?
I need to learn. Hone my skills. I'm a late bloomer in fishing. You know, I kind of started after the heart attack last year, really getting into it more. So
Oh, that's awesome.
It's the relaxation part of it.
Right.
So.
Yes, that was a new personality that popped out, Angler Dave.
Exactly.
Yes, yes.
So then, once I retire from all this, that's what I wind up doing.
Oh, fishing's awesome.
Yes, me and Dave will be out in the boat, and you won't be able to reach us. So.
Yeah. I'm sure.
Unless, I was told a long time ago, there's no getting out of this. I don't even try to kid myself. That's something John Zappas told me.
Right.
The legend himself.
Yeah. He tried to, I think he left the field for about a year, and then one day a case came in that only he could handle, one he couldn't refuse. Otherwise, he'd be leaving these people hanging out, so he had no choice but to step back in, and, then it was hard to step back out again. So
right.
I've tried before. People ask me, aren't you burnt out, or, what do you do? It's like, you just suck it up. You do the best you can, Do other things like the Buccaneer Ball, for instance.
Right.
Little extracurricular activities to entertain yourself.
That's awesome.
Yeah,
the witch's ball.
The witch's ball. Yeah, anything that's like a little bit of fun, because the groups become families,
right?
Absolutely.
And 100%.
What better thing than the witch's ball? I mean, it's just fantastic. When we came out and we saw everything that was going on, the camaraderie, everyone dressed in suits, and just so many fun things in the paranormal porthole. And
maybe this year you'll actually sit at the table.
We'll talk. Yes, absolutely. In fact, we have some fantastic ideas for next year.
Yeah, because it's only going to get bigger. Now, that event grows word of mouth. That's like the second Saturday of every October. This will be the 11th year coming up. And this year, there was roughly about 5,000 people.
I think probably more.
We need to expand it up and out of just the village because the amount of people that are coming. But we even doubled the amount of groups I had here last year. And for years, it was just basically my group. And then there was another group, but they would put us at opposite ends of the village.
Wow.
Because they were afraid, you couldn't put two ghost groups side by side. There might be some
brawl.
We might throw down, Now, we were all together, all in the back there. The paranormal portal, so it was like, that was something that, again,
it was great.
If someone would ask me 10 years ago if I'd ever see that, it was like, nah.
Wow, that's yeah, I can't imagine a world where people aren't are just heavily guarding their secrets and their techniques and everything, and that's just it doesn't come into my mind. But the fact that hey, you've done so much that's a thing of the past, and people want to share, people want to be a part of, people want to find out more, and this is a great hub here.
Saying that's I think. I always wanted to. I was always against people, profiting from this for years. But there is a. I've obviously found a middle ground where
right.
There's still a way that there's people can make money from either selling books or anything, doing a scared with their DVD series and stuff. But yet still, not be like their own little island,
right.
We don't play well with other kind of thing. Still right. Be part of the paranormal community and still participate with everyone else and still help people.
Yeah.
So it's a nice turn the way things are going.
Yeah, it is.
Absolutely.
I mean, now it's not uncommon if we run into something and we don't understand, we'll call you. And the same with you. If you run into something you don't understand, you may call, Mr. Zaffis.
Yeah, Zaffis.
So, I mean,
there's always somebody.
Right, there's always somebody.
And you always have to have somebody, because there's always someone who's going to know more than you or
right.
more experienced, even if it's more experienced in just one typical type of case. Like we ran into a case in the Hispanic community, and we were dealing with something that was definitely something of a belief system or something that was unique that we didn't understand. I mean, you'd be who I would be calling saying, hey, can explain this to me so I can understand. And see through their eyes, because I wouldn't be able to, and that's very important.
Yeah, it is.
I mean, that's critical to see from the client's perspective, because if you can't get around and see it from their perspective, you have no idea what they're experiencing.
Right,
you have to literally get in their shoes
yeah.
and understand before you can really help them.
True, I agree 100%.
Agreed.
That's a problem that some groups have. They go to do private cases, and they want to experience it. We're not there, us personally, we're not there for that. We're there to help the client with what they're experiencing.
Yeah, we're not hunting.
Going there and hope, oh, we hope we see this and that. No, we want to help them what they're having problems with.
Yeah, we just don't go out there to hunt. We go out there to help the community.
See, that's what that, we'll do fun things. Yeah, you know, we'll do like little trips.
Yeah, you do need them every now and then.
Oh,
some
yeah.
of that, you know, but you have to make that conscious decision, you know, that you're that when you're doing your regular cases, that they're coming first, and sometimes you sacrifice getting potential good evidence in lieu of helping the people.
Oh, of course.
Yeah, I totally agree.
And there's more people willing to do that. It's nice to see.
Yeah, it is.
In Burlington,
it's all about the people out there that absolutely help us. What it's about.
Absolutely.
We're just about done here. I am glad we didn't get to hook up last week, or was it the week before?
The week before, because
last week
we were up at East Stroudsburg U, and we did a presentation lecture for the students, and then we went ghost hunting, and that place is truly haunted, really haunted. We got some awesome EVPs. The students were just so entertained. We probably did four different buildings. And because of the long history of the deaths of floods and students who have died of overdoses and suicides, we were really, really able to make some great contact.
And that was the second annual.
Yes, second annual ESU Ghost Fest.
All right, guys. Well, I'm sure we're going to have you guys on again because I got more questions to ask, and I really didn't grill Ed like I wanted to.
Right.
So I'll save those questions for next
time. Yes, that doesn't need to be done.
Next week, hopefully, me and Marty will be back. Check out the website for what guests we're going to have. And see you in 1 week.